The United States International Development Finance Corp have approved a US $150 million conditional loan commitment to Balama, which is SARA's flagship project in Mozambique.
This loan, it's not a done deal. It's still subject to a bunch of conditions, right?
SARA state that the funding, if it gets over the line, will be used for feasibility studies relating to their vanadium resource, current and future tailings expansion, and point three, working and sustaining capital. It might be the third of 3 points, but I dare say that last one is quite significant.
Always read everything in mining backwards.
Put the words out of my mouth, Matty.
Money Miners, Monday, 11th of September. I hope everyone had a bloody good weekend. Boys, yourselves, good.
I had a good one, Matthew. How about you?
Oh, relatively healthy.
Good to hear.
Yes. Travis Ricciardo, Ricciardino. How are you, sunshine?
Hey, mate, I'm very well.
Mate,
how are you?
I'm good. Mate, let's get into it.
What have you got in
store? How would you describe what this episode is?
Bit of old, a bit of new.
Bit of old, bit of new. It's going to be interesting.
We've got Tieto, Calidus, Syra or Syra? What did we
Syra.
Land on? Syra.
Syra.
Liontown, briefly. And we've got a bit of a segment on Chalice as well.
Would you like to describe the segment to the Money Miners before we get into it?
Sure. So Chalice, the company, came back to the analysis we'd done on the scoping study a bit over a week ago now, and they had a few points that they wanted to clarify, and we're gonna run the Money Miners through them. We'll show them on the screen and play some snippets of what we'd said and give our sort of opinions and clarifications, as it sort of were, around those points.
Yep. Beautiful. Right. We've got a new partner we want to introduce to the Money Miners. SMEC Power and Technology. You would have just seen it fly across the graph. Now, boys, to become a Money of Mine partner, now, JD, I'm just warning you, this might take over a minute because it's a new partner. I run a strict filter test.
It's a minimum bar of character.
There is a minimum, a few little things you have to, criteria you have to pass to become a partner. So SMEC, the founder, Marty Law. So he passes the GC test. He's a bloody legend. It's an Aussie-owned, founded electrical business for the mining industry. Found it with his own flesh and blood. He's been in and around mining all his life. Son of an absolute mining legend. Yous wouldn't know him, but Dave Law, absolute legend of the underground mine. So he's been in mining. Now, SMEC, for those people who don't know, electrical gurus. So manufacturer, supply, everything electrical for the mining industry. Mate, I have even heard that they engineer genetically their own electricians, raise them from birth.
Wow.
To feed the industry with electricians. This is the type of company we're dealing
with.
It's
one way to tackle the labour crisis.
Mate, they're on the front foot with this labour shortage. So great to have them on board. Appreciate them getting involved in Money of Mine. So
cheers, SMEC.
Look, check out, I suppose, a little fun fact of being given. So they're into the variable speed secondary ventilation and vent on demand. So Westgold actually saved, they put it in their corporate update, they saved 400,000 litres of fuel for their generators by power savings from these VSDs. So fun fact, 53% cost saving on secondary vent. So SMEC, you're never going to get a bloody Prezo that long again, but it's because you're a new partner, I thought it'd go special. So thanks to Marty Law and the team at SMEC. Oh, and, of course, Terra Capital.
The guys at Terra.
Jeez, they've been getting gypped after a big long Prezo. Thanks, Lungers and Bondi, as always, for supporting the show. Terra Capital.
Yeah, boys, cheers, Terra.
Let's get into it. News of the day.
We'll start with Chalice.
Let's news of last week.
So obviously I touched on there before. We spoke about Chalice a bit over a week ago when that long-awaited scoping study came out. So we'd been, since the exploration discovery, had been a bit over 3 years, we'd been waiting for that study. And we had Emmanuel Datt of Datt Capital come on and join us for the discussion, just talk through. So we spoke for about 45 minutes from memory. We got really into the nitty-gritty details of the study.
Yeah, and we published our video. It came 2 days after the scoping study had actually been released. It was relatively public that the company had taken issue with some of the commentary within our video. Flashing up on the screen now, we had about a dozen people send us a screenshot of a LinkedIn post exchange of our video. And while The MD there, Alex Dorsch, he declined to come on the show ultimately, which is fair enough. He did send through a list of points perceived to be inaccuracies on the show. Alex confirmed that Chalice is comfortable with us sharing that these 7 points on our show today to talk through them for a broader discussion. And we'll play the relevant snip from the show the other week and summarise Chalice's perspective and provide our own if required.
I want the money miners to know the little bit of touch on these snippets was my idea. Looks like a bit of a 70s film.
Gone back in time.
Right. First point, do you want to play the snippet first, yep. Travel, or play. Put the clarification? Ooh. Right. Go.
In terms of the cost curve, put themselves in the second quartile. It's quite an interesting looking cost curve given that one project takes up more than the entire first quartile. That's obviously on their numbers.
Right. Okay, boys, take it away.
So Chalice's view of, you know, an inaccurate assertion here is that the PGE industry cost curve is based on Chalice's numbers / price assumptions. So their clarification is that the cost curve was not based on their numbers, but rather on the 2022 numbers from the analysts that they used at SFA Oxford and AME. So my take is that the numbers for the costs are Chalice's numbers, and that I feel that most listeners didn't think that I was stating that Chalice had created the whole cost curve. I thought that was somewhat implied. So they do use the, like we said, SFA Oxford 2022 numbers for byproduct credits, and all the producers are normalised with the same byproduct prices. Regardless, I don't think this was a big bone to pick.
Yeah, I mean, the points about where Chalice sits within the cost curve, no one does their own numbers on the cost curve except for their own costs, which I think is known. But if anyone interpreted it otherwise, then we're happy to clear the air on this one.
Beauty. Right.
Point two.
Point two.
We'll play it now.
Rip it.
As a reader of this study, it reads to me like they have used nominal prices in a study and comparing them to with real CapEx figures.
So Chalice wanted to clarify that all the figures are in fact 2023 real terms.
They point to the sentence on page 11, which states that, in quotation marks, all currencies are in Australian dollars and all figures are in real 2023 terms unless specified, end quotation marks. On this one, fellas, you know, we accept this, and to the extent there are misconceptions in the market about the price deck being in nominal terms, and we're keen to clarify that too. Chalice say they're in real 2023 terms, and then, you know, we're happy to accept this clarification. My wording in the episode, as you heard in the snip there, is as a reader, it appears. The reason I said it that way is because the sentence Chalice point to is in the paragraph about cost assumptions. My interpretation was that sentence related only to the cost currencies. The paragraph on price decks came 6 paragraphs before that and didn't include any colour on this point, which was the cause of mine and other commentators out there concern in reading it initially. So glad to hear they are real prices and happy to clarify this.
All right, point three, we'll play it now.
I think one measure or ratio that we use is capital efficiency, so basically NPV over CapEx. So ideally, for a high-quality project, that should be a multiple of CapEx. Something like Adriatic Metals, for example, has, in their studies, they had a capital efficiency ratio of about 6 times. This one is probably like 1-to-1, I would estimate.
So Chalice state the NPV/CapEx or value investment ratio is clearly stated to be 1-to-1.8 on page 1 of their scoping study announcement. So again, I don't think there's an awful lot of weight to this point. We had Manny on, he defined capital efficiency as the metric and said it would be roughly 1-to-1.
We think Manny's correct in this assertion and we'll show the calculations. Unlike the metric on Chalice's page 1 of the scoping study, Manny's included the expansion CapEx, not just the pre-production CapEx in his metric. If you head to page 42 of the scoping study, as we flash up on screen now, you can see the pre-production CapEx in the table. Note that these numbers only get to each of the cases about halfway throughput in terms of the production there. So in the paragraph below the table, you can see the estimated expansion CapEx for each of the cases. Manny's calculation includes the expansion capex. Chalice's VIR metric excludes it. As can be seen in, you know, my chart, I've tabled the workings on screen now. Personally, I think it's better analysis to compare an NPV derived from a full production scenario with the capital needed to get it to that full production.
All right, point four.
I think the payabilities look incredibly high from my perspective. I think that something closer to, you know, somewhere within the high 70s to low 80s, I would probably say is typical, but of course that does vary according to the nature of the contract and the other sort of treatment charges and all those sort of things.
So Chalice's critique was that this is an inaccurate statement with no basis. As stated on page 39 of the announcement, discussions with potential copper smelter customers and indicative terms received from several parties have formed the basis of offtake assumptions.
We asked Emmanuel for the basis of his thoughts on this one, and he was keen to clarify that the point was in reference only to the nickel cobalt MHP product. He says the payabilities for the copper concentrate product and the doré product look appropriate. For the MHP product, Manny referenced the Oz Minerals West Musgrave DFS assumed payabilities between 85 to 89% versus the 90% assumed by Chalice.
And it's also notable that that West Musgrave study is done at a DFS level, which have much tighter accuracy levels as opposed to this one being at a scoping study level.
Hence the 89, not 90.
Right. Point right. Five.
Rip it.
Because the commodity you choose as the base commodity in the equivalent calc, that can impact our interpretation of the numbers. I know this is a weird...
So that base commodity is the one that's referenced here. So nickel has been chosen as the base one.
Yeah, this? To yeah. be clear, you know, Chalice don't only quote the nickel equivalent. That's just the one that's stuck in our head.
Yeah,
And maybe that's, you know, us the reader's fault, but that's the one that, you know, in the market is the known number.
They do quote a palladium equivalent of 1.7 grams per tonne as yeah. well.
The real solution around this is actually, you know, if the industry agreed that looking at the net smelter return per tonne in the ground is actually the better way to think of the economic grade here.
So for point five, Chalice's critique is that the methodology used for calculating the nickel equivalent is inaccurate, and as such, it is implied that this affected resource grades and the study outcomes.
In the snippet we just heard, I thought it was quite clear that there's no criticism of the nickel equivalent methodology employed by Chalice here. The critique is penned at the industry's simplistic interpretation of an equivalent calc. I thought our wording as played in the snippet was pretty... clear about that one, but if anyone interpreted it differently, then
I saw it as a bit of a equivalency 101.
Yep.
I thought you were doing.
Yep.
That's how I interpreted it, but yep.
All right, point six, we'll play it now.
If you read really carefully in the scoping study, they actually have not been successful in treating or recovering the oxide. Yeah. They say that they've tried a number of different methods without success, hence they're just focused on a type of leaching for that oxide layer.
Chalice take issue with this statement and point out, in quotation marks, resin in pulp has been tested successfully and palladium extraction is typically 70 to 80% and gold extraction is typically approximately 90%. I think the inference that Chalice assumes is different to the point Manny is making. To clarify, the implication is not that metals are unable to be recovered from the oxide material.
So Manny asserted that Chalice is limited to specific leaching techniques due to the failure of other conventional techniques to recover metals from the oxide ores, with the implication that recoveries from oxide ores are subject to technical risk. So he supported what he said on air with us a week and a bit ago by highlighting some quotes that Chalice made in the study on pages 34 and 67, and I'll read a couple of those quotes. Options such as gravity concentration, sizing, magnetic separation, and flotation have all been tried without success, and hence the work has focused on oxidative leaching. Leaching of oxide PGE is not currently practiced, as operators have typically focused on the sulfide components. Extensive oxide leaching tests have been carried out on five separate composites, and a geometallurgical program is planned during the PFS. So Manny's view is that Further sampling and laboratory work is required to understand whether these leaching techniques are commercially viable at Gonneville.
Righto, lucky and last, seventh point. I think this was me.
Do you guys see any difficulties or foresee any difficulties in getting an open pit of this size permitted so close to Perth itself?
Oh, in a beautiful forest area.
Yeah.
Yes, I
what,
do.
What could go wrong?
I do see a lot of difficulties.
So Chalice's objection is to the inference that the project is, in quotation marks, in a forest, stating that Gonneville is situated on 100% owned farmland, and we accept this clarification.
Yeah, I did. I did say forest area. I should have been clearer and said it is close to a forest. So look, yeah, look, I guess the broader point was that permitting would not be even if they do own the farmland. We just didn't see that permitting would be straightforward just due to the biodiversity of the region. So look, I think owning the farmland that a resource project sits on, it doesn't mean it's a bloody layup or a home run. Happy to be corrected there, but that was our first take on that. So
that they are all the points, those 7 points that Chalice put forward.
I think it's a good opportunity for us to clarify our position around instances like this, Maddie and Jadeen. I think, you know, we're in the business of having an opinion on news that comes out every day. In any given show, there's probably, if you break it down into every single factual statement, there could be above 200 statements within a show. From time to time, we might get something wrong. And when we are, we're always going to be happy to clarify these things in a follow-up show. And when a company feels particularly strongly that we've misrepresented anything in a segment, we'll also always offer a right of rebuttal to that company to appear on our show.
All the papers get shit wrong all the time. But I guess another point pertinent to what you put up with the LinkedIn exchange, Trav, about, you know, contacting the company before making these comments. And you said there's a shitload of analysis and comments that go into this. But as we've been pretty vocal on what the Money of Mine brand is independence. We're not in cahoots with anyone. Contacting the company for comment before we do this opens us up to a bit of subconscious bias. Develop a relationship or a positive relationship on the phone with that person, or you might, if you thought of them as a mate or something like that. We just don't want that to influence the content and the analysis that comes out. Because if you do contact a company, they might steer you in a different direction. We're just not saying that would be the case. We just are conscious of it, and we like to. That's why, I guess it was it. These episodes are usually done in this way. But look, if there are errors or clarifications needed, we're happy to have the MD on and to clarify it afterwards. Anything more to say on that, boys?
Yeah, I think I'll just round out, Maddie, by saying, you know, a lot of these points can be somewhat subjective. I'm not necessarily agreeing with all the points that were put forward. We did our analysis and put forward what we thought. You know, Chalice have stated they've tried to keep it factual, but I'm quite, you know, proud and confident of the analysis we did, and I stand by the vast majority of it.
I think on all of the points where it turns out something may have been misrepresented, it wasn't because we didn't do the work. We did the work. The document wasn't clear, or etc.
Alrighty, what else have we got today, guys? Should we start with Tieto?
So this was interesting. You had a bit of a take on them last week, JD.
I did. So they come out with an interesting announcement today, a not so good announcement on the back of the update and the 7-year production profile.
Not so good announcement on the back of the not so good announcement.
Exactly. So we discussed, obviously, like we just mentioned, the production profile and the update that they gave to market. This has all been retracted now. So they've pulled it in its entirety, and the reasoning was that it contained an updated 7-year production schedule, which was based on an updated 2023 resource model that has not yet been released to the market, and therefore the company doesn't have a reasonable basis to make the statements contained. So
what do you reckon of this, JD?
Is this ASX pulled it? ASX have informed them to pull it? They don't disclose in it.
They don't disclose. I mean, you could make that inference. I think overall it's just a sort of poor, unprofessional look, right? Not sure if you guys had a different opinion, but, you know, coming out with information when you haven't even released the resource is just speaks a little bit about the operation there. Syrah. My apologies.
We're going to be arguing over pronunciations forever, JD.
You clearly don't drink enough wine, JD.
Jeez. So the United States International Development Finance Corp, it's a bit of a mouthful, so I'll say DFC going forward, have approved a US $150 million conditional loan commitment to Balama, which is Syrah's flagship project in Mozambique. So the DFC is an American development institution that was formed just a few years ago, and their goal is to help fund projects in low to middle income countries.
This loan, it's not a done deal. It's still subject to a bunch of conditions, right? Subject to DD, DFC no approval, certainty. Further terms. So yeah.
Agreed. So it's actually the first loan commitment that the DFC have made to a graphite project, which is an interesting point. And Syrah state that the funding, if it gets over the line, will be used for feasibility studies relating to their vanadium resource, current and future tailings expansion, and point three, working and sustaining capital. So it might be the third of 3 points, but I dare say that last one is quite significant.
Always read everything in mining backwards.
Took the words out of my mouth, Maddie. So a couple more details on what that loan commitment could look like if it comes through is it's up to US $150 million, a term of up to 13 years, and the interest rate will be fixed at, in quotation marks, applicable long-dated US Treasury rates plus a margin. So, yeah, the inference is that it would be quite a friendlier loan than they would get from a corporate.
Yeah. They're up today, aren't they?
They are. It's funding at a reasonable rate. It's not a bad announcement. They had a half-year results also come out, but obviously given that they put out quarterly reports, there was no new information here. But for context, Syrah lost US $38.6 million in the 6 months to 30th June. And a little fact is that they are the 10th most shorted stock. I know you love these ones, Maddie, on the ASX. So 7% of the shares have been sold short.
So the shorters would have been unsuccessful. Hoping for an equity raise.
Depends what.
That's not the only thesis. That is one way of, getting out of a short. But I think, it's probably a much more, in Syrah's case, maybe a much more fundamental, or maybe it's a more commodity-based view that they have.
Yeah, I suspect it's got something to do with the balance sheet, Maddie and JD, which doesn't look too flash. You can see in those financial statements they've got US $173 million in borrowings, which includes both the face value of the convertible notes to AusSuper and the drawn debt with US Department of Energy. So market cap today is just north of Aussie $400 million. So the gearing will be pretty high if that new debt ends up getting executed. Thankfully, they are mostly with friendly lenders, right? Which, such as governments, which can be a bit more friendly than when your lender isn't a government, like the company we're about to talk about.
So
next.
It could be a bit of short term positivity, but they're still going to be under a lot of balance sheet pressure.
Yeah, they need to turn around the asset and hope that
got to make money, commodity prices go their
way. It's like not being able to explore forever. Eventually, you've got to mine something.
Yeah.
How about we have a chat about Calidus now? So they came out with information that the BlueSpec project has secured its final approvals. So all the permitting is received. Just by the way, BlueSpec is 75 kilometres from their Warrawoona plant. It's got a resource of 190,000 ounces at 24.0 grams per tonne, but a reserve,
yeah.
Fucking hell.
Reserve of 83,000 ounces at 11.4 grams. So even once it's converted into reserves, it's still very, very high grade. It's a cut and fill mine, not a stope and mine. So.
Yeah, exactly. You chuck on the mining parameters, the grade comes down significantly, but 11.4 is still a decent grade. So it's like you said, an underground project. There'll be looking to use it to add 30,000 ounces per annum to the production profile at Warrawoona. Obviously, granted that final investment decision has not yet been made. They're also reviewing a couple other projects.
Yeah, because they got those that Hayoma joint venture, so a lot of other potential projects to feed that mill.
Speaking of that mill, Maddie, it's 100,000 tonnes per annum that they picked up.
I think they quoted 150. Yeah, sorry, the existing one was 100,000 tonne per annum.
Not fit for purpose, right?
So they bought it off Novo Resources in 2020, but that mill was, it doesn't sound like that project had any success trying to separate the gold out. So it is refractory gold.
Exactly. On the theme of the mill, they're looking to do something a bit different to what's going on at the more conventional Warrawoona.
Yeah, so instead of separating out the gold, because it's locked in antimony, so it's stibnite is the mineral, so the gold is locked inside that, so they can't conventional cyanide leaching doesn't get it out, so it's refractory. So
like pistachio nuts?
No, I actually said that wrong.
Oh, did you?
Or like pistachio nuts, it would work in the cyanide, so the cyanide can't get into the – it's not the carbon that attaches to the nut. It's the cyanide can't get inside the nut to turn the gold into solution.
Wow.
So I had to correct my pistachio. But still got some good runs. Everyone know what I mean.
So the outcome in this case is that they're going to produce a gold antimony
– Concentrate,
yeah, right?
I contacted the company to confirm it, but they said the gold – the antimony credit in the concentrate is going to look of hoping to offset the payability of the fact that they're selling the gold in the concentrate.
You
get a lower payability on the gold, but you get a credit for the antimony credit. So they're hoping that that's going to, work out the same as if you were separating the gold.
And Maddie, on the CapEx front, we'd previously seen flagged in a presentation that what they need to do is looking to cost $34 million.
Although there was a line paid capital $34 million.
Yeah, but there was a line in today's announcement that there would be a reduction, a significant reduction in capex for the blue spec.
Yeah, so the company said that they've chosen to go down the road of using a China built mill instead of having GR Engineering do it in Australia. So a lot more of a smaller mill, so build it over there like a plug and play. And they're also going to use the Novo Resources camp at Nullagine rather than building their own accommodation at Blue Specs. So that's going to say, but they said they don't have any, they haven't released any capital numbers to the market. They've just said there's going to be a reduction. So that's not yet confirmed. So
look. Okay. And that proposed mill would be done at Warrawoona to tap in the power.
Yeah, well, you get to use the power and the existing infrastructure. Yep. So you got cheaper operating costs. They still have to truck it 75 kilometres. So look, you might lose a gram off the 10 grams. So
there was a tweet I saw this morning about Calidus, Maddie, and I think it summed up the thoughts that I have about the company quite well. And I think it also sums up the sort of context in which we've spoken about the company in the past. I'll read it out. So it's from Respeculator. Tietto had grade reconciliation issues last week, but they have no debt and ergo no hedge book. Calidus has a similar issue with a truckload of debt and poor hedge book in WA. When does the equity go to zero?
What does equity go to zero mean? What's it mean by like that? Like liquidation?
Yeah, the only time you really see equity go to zero in mining is when there's debt involved and it has to get put into put into administration. And then, of course, you know, secured creditors and then unsecured creditors get paid out before equity has any residual claim in that event. But, I mean, yeah, it's not doomsday yet for Calidus. They've got the hedge book and the project finance facility both with Macquarie. It's all about getting more ounces as early as possible so that you've got more production exposed to the higher gold price rather than delivering into your hedge book.
Agreed.
Yeah. So they sum it up. Between the debt, the ramp-up issues, the hedge book, there's just a bit of pressure to perform here to get out of the...
Yeah, I think the last numbers were net debt of $81 million still, so they'll have interest payments coming off that, which they need to meet.
You can scratch debt as an option to fund Blue Spec, you'd say, because of the existing debt. It'll have to come via an equity raise of some sort.
Not entirely. Is there a possibility? Potentially, yeah. There could be an appetite for a convertible or hybrid approach. I'm not entirely sure where the market sits on that one. But in their case, I think the hedge book is around about the 100,000 ounce mark.
It's a bit over 100,000, I think, at 23 something an ounce.
Yeah.
So, over the next three odd.
Until 25, September 2025. So,
yeah. So that Blue Spec was quoted in the previous report to be $1,641 all-in sustaining cost for production. So not sure if that'll be updated or not, but hopefully lower capex. So we'll wait and see.
One last one to touch on, guys, Liontown.
Mm.
So Albemarle due diligence is commencing. So They've obviously reached an agreement which they alluded to in the previous announcement that we'd seen on Monday of last week. They've reached a non-disclosure and exclusivity agreement. The DD will start soon and it will last approximately 4 weeks.
Wonder if there'll be a premium proposal coming in that 4 weeks. If they're in this DD period, there's nothing stopping another company coming in with a superior proposal during that time.
Yeah, there's a no shop, no talk sort of agreement in and around, but it doesn't stop another party coming in over the top and bidding more.
Yeah, so they can put a, unsolicited bid in.
That's right. Liontown cannot solicit.
And I suppose just in context from last week, if anyone didn't pick up on it, was the increased trading volume, and I think there was three cross trades, and the suspected party was Gina Reinhart, but not confirmed.
That's right. So they're trading in and around that $3 mark now.
And we did talk to, I don't know, Gina just doesn't make sense to me.
You heard it here first.
I don't know. Well, I'll take it from Jay Lowry's interview. Remember talking about Jay Lowry and Albemarle?
Yeah.
Not being an operator. He rated them as the poorest operator based on the fact that what have they done operationally? They've bought into a lot. Hancock looks to me the same thing. If you talk, this is an underground lithium company.
I think a lot of the articles I've been reading have been drawing the connection between Gina and MinRes as well, and sort of they've got a close relationship. So maybe the underground expertise comes from MinRes's side.
Yeah, well, and that sort of where I was going with it. Like, if you're going to pick a company that has underground expertise that could run a big project, that is looking into this space.
Yeah.
I can only think of one.
Well, Burncut's already got the project, right?
So yeah, I mean, but a publicly listed company that will want to run it, not execute. The only one that comes to mind that looks to be dabbling in lifting is Develop. So, and as you said, whether that'll be with MinRes or something, but who knows? Wait and see.
Got a big price tag on it.
Yeah, well, you don't want to fuck it up because it's got a big price tag on it. So you want people that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right, hey, beauty boys.
Hey, there we go.
Thanks to all the partners and
SMEC,
the Terra. New partner, Terra, K-Drill, JP Search, and Anytime Exploration. Appreciate your bloody support, GC. So, righto.
Hooray.
If anyone else wants to be a partner, you're automatically a GC too. So, if you pass the filter test.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.